It is Wednesday, February 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Malaysian police identify a North Korean diplomat as a possible suspect in the killing of the half-brother of North Korea's leader.
The police have asked to speak to him. They've also asked to speak to two other North Koreans.
A new Amnesty International report warns against what it calls the rising rhetoric of division and fear-mongering. And life is looking up for singer Selena Gomez. It's all ahead. Malaysian police Wednesday said they want to question three new North Korean suspects, including a North Korean diplomat, in connection with the apparent assassination last week of Kim Jong-nam, the older half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Two women, one from Vietnam and one from Indonesia, are believed to be the assailants who ran up to Kim Jong-nam at the Kuala Lumpur International Airport. They allegedly poisoned him by spraying him in the face with an unidentified liquid and holding a cloth over his face. Police Chief Khalid Abubakar spoke at a news conference in Kuala Lumpur.
These two ladies were trained to swab deceased face. To, you know, before that, the four suspects will give them the liquid. We'll put the liquid on their hands. They are supposed to wipe it over deceased face. So the Indonesian did it first and followed by the Vietnamese lady. Wipe the face of the deceased, and after that they were instructed to clean their hands. And they know it is toxic.
I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Patton, who's in Seoul.
Named in connection, in a very vague connection with this case, is a diplomat with the North Korean embassy in Kuala Lumpur. The police have asked to speak to him. They've also asked to speak to two other North Koreans, and they're asking for the North Korean embassy's help to bring them to the police so they can cooperate and be questioned. The second one that they asked for is a representative from the North Korean airline, Air Korea. And the second development was that the Malaysian police refuted a claim made by one of the suspects, at least, who is already in jail. Two women have been arrested, one a Vietnamese woman and one a Indonesian woman. These two women were allegedly the assailants of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's estranged half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, who was killed at the Kuala Lumpur airport last week. And the manner of his murder was these two alleged assailants, these women, came up to him and sprayed him with a liquid and pulled the cloth over his face so that he would have to breathe it in. And this unidentified liquid to date was some sort of toxic poison that rapidly killed him on his way to seeking medical assistance afterwards. The two women who were arrested, one of the women, at least one of them, the one from Indonesia, claimed that she was doing this as a prank for a TV show, a comedy TV show. She was hired as an actress to perform these pranks and that she's done them in the past. Well, the police have refuted that claim, saying if you watch carefully the video, these women, as soon as they applied the toxic liquid to the victim, they ran to the bathroom to wash their hands. The police said that these two women, along with their team of handlers, practiced this assault at least on two occasions in the past, and that they were instructed this time that they were handling a very toxic chemical and that they had to wash their hands afterwards. So they refuted that claim.
So, in other words, authorities think that these women had some kind of training.
Yes, exactly right. And that they knew what they were doing. They were not victims here. They were knowledgeable assailants, is what the police are saying. And the third piece of information that they brought up, which is new, is that recently this week, the police said someone tried to break into the morgue where the body was being held, and that they have increased security around that to prevent that from happening again. They did not give any details about who might have been involved in the alleged break-in or what their motivation was, but left it all to our imagination. With all these details combined, particularly that there are now more North Koreans being sought in this probe, that one of the interested parties that the police want to question works for the embassy itself, that there are, in addition to that, there are four North Koreans who the police want to talk to who have allegedly left Malaysia and are now in North Korea, and the Malaysian police have requested that they be returned to Kuala Lumpur for questioning. So more and more, it is looking like the North Koreans are either trying to obstruct the investigation or somehow involved in this, directly involved in the planning and execution of the murder of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's brother. The North Korean government has so far refused to cooperate in any way, even to provide DNA samples or dental records to confirm that Kim Jong-nam was indeed the victim here.
Is it known when the body of Kim Jong-nam, assuming that it is him, it seems like it is, but when it will be released to his family?
No family has come to claim. There's been no cooperation at all from North Korea on that front either. So they didn't have any update on that front as well.
No, I was just thinking because I think he has children in Macau.
Yes, but I believe that because he's a North Korean citizen, that the government has some rights here.
That's VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden reporting from Seoul, South Korea. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, in the midst of some controversy and some terrible incidents, two groups in two different cities are using social media and online fundraising to do some good. So this starts about a month ago in Victoria, Texas, a small town in Texas where an Islamic center burned down. It's being investigated as an arson. And some folks put up a crowdfunded plea online saying that they wanted to raise funds for this Islamic center to rebuild it. And so much attention has been generated to this on social media that in the course of about a month, they've raised over $1.1 million to rebuild this Islamic center. And they've received a lot of outpouring from a lot of Jewish groups, from a lot of Christian groups, trying to come together to show how they can help and how Islam is not, it gets a lot of negative attention. There's a lot of terrible things said about Muslims and the Islamic faith, and these people are coming together to show that's not the case. This is part of their community to do this. So coming online to do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of money in a short time.
It is, absolutely. It shows just the positive feelings. And then we have stories coming out of Victoria, Texas as well, where the local Jewish center was giving the keys to the Jewish center to the imams so they could host services there. So a lot of great stories coming out of that tragic situation. And now, just a few days ago, we have an incident in near St. Louis, Missouri, where a Jewish cemetery was vandalized and dozens of headstones were knocked over. Well, this crowdfunding page was set up, and it's called Muslims Unite to Repair Jewish Cemetery, and they're repaying, and albeit in a different city, but kind of repaying that gratitude that was shown towards them in this mosque burning in Victoria, Texas. And this page, only been up for a few days, has already raised over $70,000, well above the goal that they had set out to repair the cemetery. And again, a lot of people from different faiths coming together. So in the midst of a lot of contention, especially about Muslims and Islam, you're seeing examples here of people trying to help some Muslims who have had their mosque burned in Texas, and you're also seeing some Muslims come together to help with this Jewish cemetery. And again, stretching across different religious divides, whether it's Muslims or Jews or Christians, everybody coming together and using this online crowdfunding and social media to draw attention to these stories and try to raise funds for these.
Yeah, very encouraging news.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Questions remain about what will happen to Mosul once the Islamic State is ousted. Somalia's new president pledges to tackle issues of insecurity and corruption. President Donald Trump dismisses protests against his effort to scuttle the health care law. And U.S. home sales surged to a 10-year high in January. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have discovered that it took a lot longer for non-bird-like dinosaur eggs to hatch than previously believed. It's been long thought that the length of dinosaur incubation was comparable to a bird's, between 11 to 85 days, since the two are related. But after studying the teeth of fossilized dinosaur embryos with high-tech tools, researchers found that eggs of these non-avian dinosaurs took between 3 and 6 months to hatch. This incubation period is typical of today's reptile species. An egg of the huge Komodo dragon, for example, takes about 8 months to hatch. The researchers say their findings imply that this lengthy incubation period may have had an impact on non-avian dinosaurs not surviving the KT mass extinction event some 65 million years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a report on Arizona voters who support President Donald Trump. A leading rights group warns against the global fallout of toxic and divisive rhetoric and growing public indifference of atrocities. Lisa Bryant has more on Amnesty International's latest annual report, released Wednesday in Paris.
The report covers rights abuses in 2016, ranging from government efforts to stifle free expression in countries like Ethiopia, Bangladesh, and Russia, to brutal attacks on civilians in places like Syria, Yemen, and Sudan. Just as chilling, Amnesty International Secretary General Salih Shetty says, is a dehumanizing us versus them rhetoric by politicians ranging from the heads of Hungary and Turkey to U.S. President Donald Trump. The target, immigrants, Muslims, and other groups.
And at the root of this rhetoric lies a dangerous idea. The idea that some people are less human than others.
Also worrying, Amnesty says, is the international community's reaction to horrific incidents like bombings in Syria, migrant drownings in the Mediterranean, or reports of chemical weapons use in Darfur, Sudan.
We have reached a point where there is no longer any red line. Almost no action has become too appalling or indefensible.
But he also says ordinary people can change things, pointing to grassroots efforts afoot in Europe, Africa, and the United States. In Africa, Amnesty says it's alarmed at attacks against free expression and the rights of vulnerable groups like LGBT members. Amnesty Africa researcher Gaitan Mutu.
People have been arrested, for example, in Côte d'Ivoire because they were protesting against the referendum. Many of them were arrested and released shortly afterwards.
He says similar actions have taken place in Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. Amnesty has also skewered France for its state of emergency following the 2015 terrorist attacks and the Trump administration's efforts to impose a temporary travel ban against 7 majority Muslim countries. The U.S. government says such a ban is necessary until tougher measures are in place to weed out potential terrorists from entering. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Here in the United States, the owners of a local printing company in Arizona are looking to President Donald Trump to cut taxes and improve the business climate. Mike O'Sullivan spoke with the owners who backed Trump and with their son who did not about what they expect from the president.
Richard and Patricia Jandrew own a printing business near the shores of Lake Havasu, Arizona. They are fans of Donald Trump.
There's no punches to be pulled. There's no secrets. He tells it the way it is.
They say the president has much to handle and is doing it his own way. They understand his bluster and style.
But he's always been that way. That's Trump. I mean, we're New Yorkers. We know that that's how he's always been.
They look to the president to offer tax relief for their business.
Everybody needs to pay taxes. I get that. But we need a little help.
She says she would love to be able to give benefits to employees.
That we could afford. I mean, without them, we're nothing. And right now, we just can't do that.
Committed Republicans, the Jandrews say that Democrats have pursued a losing strategy.
You can't keep taxing the rich because eventually they ain't going to want to pay. They'll just, what are they doing again? Oh, yeah, moving away. They've all moved out.
Offshore competition worries their son, Tristan, a business student. He is a moderate who was impressed with Democrat Bernie Sanders, but so far is not impressed with Donald Trump. The main issue for him?
Definitely jobs coming back, but jobs not, you know, in old industries that we're not really, you know, expanding in anymore. I know China's doing a lot of big things with solar energy. Trump has said he wants to compete with China.
He says what he has seen so far is a smokescreen.
We're going to see if the checks and balances of our system work and if he's going to actually do something that is, you know, is going to be viable in the long term.
Divided on Trump, this family agrees they want the economy to work for all Americans. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Lake Havasu City, Arizona.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. A popular singer's health and relationship woes seem behind her. Here to tell us more is VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London, who joins me with all the details.
Today we're going to talk about one of the hottest young female pop stars on the planet. Her name is Selena Gomez. And last week she put out a brand new single from her brand new upcoming album. Last year, she put out an album called Revival, and you may recall that she checked herself into rehab. She has an illness called lupus. There's no cure for that. She suffered from anxiety and depression, and so she went into rehab for treatment for that and spent a few months in the rehab facility, came out, and now she's kind of got a renewed outlook on things. She separated herself from a very toxic relationship she'd had with Justin Bieber. And now she's got a new romance going on with her new boyfriend, who's The Weeknd. He happens to be another pop star in music. And Justin's been very vocal about that, very jealous about that. But nonetheless, she seems in a good place. She's very happy. So she's got a new song, and we're going to check it out right now. And it's called It Ain't Me.
Well, certainly she has two very prominent boyfriends, Justin Bieber and also The Weeknd.
Yep.
You know, The Weeknd has had at least two pretty big hits.
Huge hits. And he's got a new album, Starboy. In fact, I mentioned Justin Bieber posted an Instagram video of himself saying, "Hey, my new favorite song is Starboy." So obviously he was being very sarcastic and kind of poking fun at Selena's new boyfriend. But that hasn't fazed her at all. You know, she's moving on, moving forward. She's got a new album. She says the new album is going to be dance music. And the new song features Kygo, who's a very well-known EDM producer in the game. It's called It Ain't Me. She also said that she's worked with DJ Snake, who's another EDM producer, on another single. And so we're going to have some new music, a new album, dance music, a kind of a departure from what she's known for. And last year's album was called Revival. She was reinventing herself last year when she put it out. So she's reinventing herself now with her next album. She signed a multi-million dollar deal with Coach Handbags. She's the new celebrity face of Coach Handbags. She's also the face of Pantene Hair Shampoo. And I suspect that she'll be going out on tour as well when the new album comes out later on this year.
All right, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. Who's gonna rock you when the sun won't let you sleep? Who's waking up to drive you home when you're drunk and all alone? Who's gonna walk you through the dark side of the morning? And that is the music of Selena Gomez, and that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. This is one of a series on the U.S. Constitution and the structure of the U.S. government.
In a bid to protect the rights of citizens, the founders of the United States of America included in the Constitution, or the legal framework of the new government, 10 amendments, 3 to protect individual rights and 7 to ensure justice. They are collectively named the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment deals with issues of privacy. It states that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Search and seizure of private property by authorities was a major grievance with the framers of the Constitution. This is borne out in the writings of James Otis, Jr., a colonial lawyer in Massachusetts, who argued in court against writs of assistance, used instead of warrants by British officials to enter private homes and businesses to search for evidence of smuggling. Writs never expired and were transferable from one official to another. Arguing before a British court that writs should not be legal, Otis said that with a writ, custom house officers may enter our houses when they please. We are commanded to permit their entry. Their menial servants may enter, may break locks, bars, and everything in their way, and whether they break through malice or revenge, no man, no court can inquire. Bare suspicion without oath is sufficient. Otis lost that case. But his arguments, as well as the memory of the violations of privacy and unreasonable searches suffered by the colonists under the British government, influenced the framers of the Constitution. And thus, the First Amendment to the Constitution to deal with justice took aim at unreasonable search and seizure. As a result, any search, seizure, or arrest requires a judicially sanctioned warrant, which must be supported by probable cause. The warrant is limited in scope by specific information supplied to the issuing court. Evidence obtained without a warrant, and thus illegally, cannot be introduced into a criminal trial. In the words of mid-20th century Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, at the very core of the Fourth Amendment stands the right of a man to retreat into his own home and there be free from unreasonable governmental intrusion.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.